And I think that this is one of the most common misconceptions when we talk about scaling and we talk about growth in our music school, that we think that somehow it magically happens through automation and systems and well-documented procedures solely. Those things are really important. However, there is also you're setting aside a clear intention in building team and investing in the people so that they can develop both the hard and soft skills necessary to actually thrive with all your systems, right?
Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. We've gathered the dynamic trio again together. Nate, Alyssa, Daniel, all in the same Riverside Zoom chat once again. Actually, guys, I much preferred the last one where we all could be in the same room together.
Yeah.
But, you know, we live in three different states, so what are you going to do?
Well, we're grateful to be back together again and so soon, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, speaking of the last time that we met together, we had just decided, since we were all gathering in New York the last time, that we would definitely make a podcast happen. And we came in with a few topic ideas. And as I said in the previous episode that we were all together, we came in with two ideas and we left with eight. And
yeah.
And so this is another one of those ones that we had intended to record that really busy weekend that we had. And I'm actually really excited for this one, because what I think was so unique and special about the last one was that we each brought a perspective that the other really couldn't have had, because we've all had different experiences. And just the feedback that I got from people was that it was just a much more casual conversational episode. And so I'm thinking we can do the same thing here, but it's not going to be as personally focused this time. We're actually going to talk about a real issue, real issues that we see coming up with other school owners that we talk to. And that is the topic of what happens when a key employee leaves. This is definitely one of those nightmare scenarios that school owners talk about. But actually, as we get into this today, I don't actually know if that's the case. And we're going to explore that a little bit, because in all reality, each of us has had this experience. So I'm ready to dive in, guys. What about you?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Right.
Alyssa, tell us about this situation of a key team member at Musicians Playground leaving.
Awesome. Yeah. And I will preface this by saying the first key team member I lost is now my best. She's my best friend. We've maintained a best friendship. So I have to put that out there, because if she listens to this, she'll have a good laugh. But I also want to say that when I speak about this story, I'm speaking about since then, you know, not just the loss of her, but the loss of so many other key team members, because that's the life of business. This is what I want to preface what I'm about to say, which is, you know, there are things called gravity problems in business. And this is not something that any studio owner is going to be immune to, let alone any business owner. You know, the reality of business is we have to create a business that's not based on the people, but on the systems. And so I think the sooner we can realize that, that this is something that we have to go through, not only as a part of just our own evolution, but as a part of being a business owner, I think the more comfort we can take in these kinds of maybe scary or semi-threatening situations.
Sure.
So I would take this back to 2019, and it's Madison. So she was my very first kind of quasi operations manager / general manager for Musicians Playground. And I know for different sizes of studios listening, sometimes we hear these words and we think, goodness, I can't wait till I'm big enough to have a team member that has that title. But I can say that whether it's an administrative assistant, whether it's like a friend down the street helping with various aspects in the business, doesn't matter the title. These people are doing a specific role within our business that we tend to let go of for a while. And maybe even forget how important it is to the business, even forget what it is altogether, right? So I think that there becomes this level of, I would say, dependence on these people that sneaks up, creeps up, gets bigger and bigger through the time that they're with us. Mm-hmm. And then with Madison, couple that with a best friendship. So we had a really tight personal connection. And so for a while, things were brewing. I could tell Madison wasn't super happy in the work she was doing any longer. She's a really bright, wonderful person. And I think she just was ready to move on to something bigger, something better. I totally understood that. But I didn't want to admit that. I was in a state of denial. And so so through time, things started getting quieter and quieter. Our personal relationships started getting a little bit more affected. And finally, I just had a conversation. I said, what's going on? And there it was. She was going to move on. Oh, my goodness. Nate and Daniel, I think the feeling in my body, I thought I left my body temporarily because all I could think of was Musicians Playground's done. That's it. We're closing
right.
shop.
Right.
We're closing shop. That's the end. There is the end of my story right here based on Madison leaving. And so actually, I think, Nate, I can't remember if, I think the second ops manager I lost was when I called you and I started leaning into some of my people that I know have gone through this 100 times over. But this time I didn't really have those formal relationships built. And I thought, what the bleep am I going to do? So I panicked. Like I definitely had a couple dark weeks of life where I lost a lot of sleep. I was in just kind of a state of paralysis, had no idea where I was going to, what I was going to do next. And then finally executive functioning came back on and I started creating some steps to make sure that Musicians Playground did not fail at the site of Madison leaving. So that's the story. And I think, like I said, with people listening, whether it's, you know, whether it's a teacher, whether it's an administrative member, whether it's, you know, who, it doesn't matter who it is. But I think the key here is we develop a certain level of quote unquote dependence on this person. So that's what I'd say are the through threads of anybody that I have worked very closely with and have felt very, very sad over losing and or very fearful over losing in the history of Musicians Playground.
So my first question for you would be, did anything bad happen as a result? Like you had this I called it a nightmare scenario earlier. Did you experience even a fraction of the nightmare that kind of went through your head? Because you said, the business is over. That's it. Obviously it wasn't. You're bigger than ever now. You're the biggest you've ever been. So, you know, did anything bad happen as a result of that?
You know, no. And as I have looked historically at all of the losses, because they keep getting bigger and scarier, right? Like the bigger our schools get and the more stake that we have in terms of each role that we offer somebody. And I also think as a business owner, as we get bigger, we lose visibility of specific roles faster. And or we maybe have never had visibility of a role. So it becomes a completely different animal as we grow up as business owners in these transitions. And I think that in some ways there can be more financial consequences at stake with these losses. But no. And I look at a lot of times these losses have led to beautiful opportunities. One, to look at my business operations and understand what's failing and how this is happening or has happened with this person so far. Two, could I consolidate any of these aspects? Do I need to take any of these aspects back? Do I need to give them to somebody quite a little bit different on the team? Is there a different role that I need to create, you know, et cetera? Is there a way for restructuring this to serve me and my business better? And then I think three, I do really and truly believe in kind of universal intervention. And I know that this is getting into some murky territory on this podcast here. We won't go too deep, but I believe in my own experience, there's just been too many moments where I've been like left, like what just happened? Like, and then I look back at the 10, 13 years I've been living my life and just the crazy things that have happened. And I, at the time I kind of recognize them because I'm clinging on for dear life to the past version of whatever it was. Right. And then it crumbles against my will. It crumbles. And then all of a sudden I'm teleported into this new reality and I'm reluctantly moving into it. And then somebody or something shows up and I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool, actually. Like, and that's exactly how I would describe every single teacher transition that I've had or administrative or key team member transition. It's like when I lose one, I gain an even better opportunity. And so Sometimes, like in the case of my last ops manager, Alyssa, I love her again, another dear personal friend who we maintain very close ties through these transitions. You know, someone else came in who then could be, she was doubling as a teacher and an ops manager. She was constantly burned out and she loved the business so much. She wanted to try really hard to make it work. But there was a moment her and I just kind of like looked at each other. We're like, we can't keep you doing this, you know? So I grabbed somebody who was a volunteer for the business, super good, 10 years customer service. He was a clear fit. He came in the very month that Alyssa decided that it was time to step down. You can't make this stuff up. He's now the ops manager, super amazing. Like the business has never been cleaner, more well operated. The teacher's never better taken care of. You know, enter in then my now business partner. It's just these things you can't, you know, if someone were to take coaching with us, I think all three of us could agree. We can't say like, okay, you're going to go out and find this unicorn. These people find their way to us at the right time. And so I think some of this, and I'll kind of end my answer here. Some of this is also that like, we have to lean into faith. We have to lean into trust. We have to lean into just being a part of the process and seeing what unfolds and working with what we're given. So, yeah.
Alyssa, can I double down on one thing you said earlier? Because you talked about, and Daniel asked it beautifully by saying, you know, what was the nightmare that in fact unfolded? And then you were like, actually, there wasn't a nightmare that unfolded afterwards. But it reminds me of one of the exercises that one of my coaches had me go through like over and over, which she called the story cycling, which was just like, what were the circumstances that triggered the event, right? What kind of belief, negative self-talk did that end up leading to? And then what did I actually feel in the moment? Because you don't want to discount, Alyssa, what you were talking about, that initial like panic, right? We can't pretend like somehow we're just like, you know, automatrons in this effort, right? It's like, no, we're actually momentarily panicked and it's creating an emotional, it's creating essentially, it's like destabilizing the way we operate in the moment because of all of the emotions we're feeling, right? And then she would take me through this next step, which was like step four. She's like, okay, once you've actually written down what you felt, then what type of actions did you actually take? And she and you, of course, you highlighted a couple of great examples where, like, in the case, the most recent example, you sat down with a current teacher slash admin and you both looked at each other and were like, hey, this isn't working. And then it turned into another action, which was actually recognizing the opportunity of the human right in front of you. One, I think, fascinating point that my coach made to me that I really appreciated, she was like, Nate, if you do nothing, understand that that's an action. Like you're actually choosing to do nothing. And so that was a really important distinction for me.
Yeah.
Because that's where I was like, oh, dig it, Nate. This is where my avoidance stepped in. What I did was I applied avoidance. The action I took was to just pretend that I didn't have to do anything. and I was like, okay. And then the last piece, of course, is like you write out in the story cycle, step five is you just literally write out what the results were, which you just laid out for us beautifully. You were like, oh, actually it turned into an inflection point. Mm-hmm. And there was another opportunity who was Alyssa. And then post Alyssa, there was yet another opportunity who's your current ops manager. And so anyways, I appreciate, I mean, I really appreciated it this every time we get an opportunity to talk together on the pod or otherwise, but I really appreciate how you're ready and willing to share what it actually looks and feels like in the moment of transition.
Yes.
You know, which I dig because I think our listeners probably feel this and then might feel a little bit of shame or embarrassment.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it's like, no, don't go there. Accept the emotions you're feeling and then listen to the wisdom that Alyssa just shared about what can happen next.
You know, Nate, I would love to know too, for maybe both you and Daniel as well, but knowing that you've probably in your history of BMF running it have lost quite a few key people, do you still today feel any shred of like ooh, ow, that kind of hurts, or I'm afraid? Or have you gotten to a totally immune place? Because I still will have that feeling even today, even though I know I have all that proof. Like, I know this is going to be okay, but there is still maybe not 2 weeks of a dark time, but I'll have like maybe a few hours, right? Do you experience that, or have you become immune to that?
I think that 100% not immune to it. But I think the key part of the story you just shared was where you said, I had deep relationships with these people. In fact, I continue to be friends with all of them. I'm not sure you said there's anybody who you like don't even say hello to, even at, like, on Facebook or whatever. You know, like you're still, you're a bit like both Alyssa and then your first,
Madison, yeah.
Yeah, with Madison, thank you. You said, yeah, no, we're still very close friends. I think that the thing that I'm feeling, like it just happened, I mean, I'm going to share a different story, my example, when we get there, but we just had a key member of our team leave. And yeah, of course, like I had to journal about that sucker for like 2 weeks because they were a near and dear thought partner, creative partner. I really appreciated the relationship we had. I look forward to positive focus with them on a meeting. Mm-hmm. I loved that they shared their growing family and photos and videos of their kids and these things. Like, and then you don't have those anymore, really, because we spend more time on the job site than we do basically doing anything else.
Yeah.
Right. So I think your question is a great one. And I would actually reframe it to say I'd be terrified if I didn't feel anything.
Yeah, that's
okay. I'd be like, whoa, dude, you need to go back to your practice because if you're not feeling anything right now, then your heart is closing up.
Yes. Oh, I love that reminder, Nate, because it's so easy also to harden ourselves or to get cold to people because of these transitions over time. There's like almost a development of an assumption that people are just going to leave. And so why invest in them or why open up or why? And you know, it's again, I'm not going to go here. It's my forte right now. I'm like really into the PD work therapy. So it's like, you know, it mirrors so much to our relational attachment styles and other parts of life and kind of how we show up in other ways in our life. But just with purpose of keeping it professionally related, I think like it's such a great reminder that we have to stay open and we have to just remember like, change is part of this. Change is part of the life of the business. Our business is a living organism, right? And if we try to hold on to people or things, like it's going to stifle the growth of it. So what a great reminder to stay open in that process, even though it can be a little scary.
There is something though about what you said there, Alyssa. So the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics says that the average amount of time that a team member stays in a company is 3.9 years. So they're going to leave. They're going to leave. Yeah. This isn't against what you're saying, Alyssa. It's not at all. It's a foregone conclusion. Someone isn't going to spend the next 40 years of their life. If like you hire someone at age 25, and are they going to be your operations manager until they're 65? Most likely not. And so we need to invest in them understanding that there is, if averages play out, that there is an expiration date for that team member, and simultaneously understanding that doesn't exclude the idea that something deeper could be built there than just a work relationship.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Maybe before we transition to Nate, because I can already feel like a natural transition coming because Nate was already kind of hinting at some of the things he was going to say. But Alyssa, is there anything concrete that you could give to someone who's listening or if they're watching on YouTube? Is there something concrete that you could give them to say, hey, do this in your business, learn from this scenario that I just was talking about to sharing? What concrete thing would you tell them to do?
You know, and I want to credit Nate for some of the things I'm about to say because I called Nate last year, last summer, when I lost my more recent ops manager to get his perspective. And some of these things were things that he also helped me to understand were good actions. So Nate, I apologize if I'm stealing some of your thunder.
I'm grateful it's of use.
So I would say in combining Nate's wisdom with some of the things that I've done, I would recommend that one, people be proactive, firstly, in the conversations that are happening with their team. So if you sense something's off, if you sense it's been off for a while, don't let that milk stay in the fridge, because that's going to take down, quite honestly, an entire operation if it sits there, rotting too long. So I would make sure you have those conversations and be proactive, be assertive about it, and make sure that you're also having any person who is working for your business, I don't care at what stage of business the listener is at, that they're making systematize their role through, standard operating procedure documents. So there has got to be kind of a recording of their work, how they're doing it, and a compilation of a library of resources or systems that those people follow to do whatever it is that they're doing, right? Another thing that sometimes, and Nate, I don't think this was one we talked about, but I've done it personally, is here and there, I take advantage of people taking vacation. And I do that purposely, fruitfully, because I want to see if I can give someone else that role as a test temporarily to see how well the systems we do have in place are. And it just gives us a really good reason to get some systems in place if there's anything missing to that date. So that's a nice way of kind of pressure testing along the way before it becomes a reality of losing that person. If they go on vacation, you say, wonderful, have an amazing 2 weeks away, and we're going to, have a really good time testing all the systems while you're gone. So that's a good one to do as well. Finally, I would definitely have, I always have an interview with my person when they decide they're going to leave. The first step of that transition process is, okay, tell me what was working about your role. Tell me what was not working. Tell me what was painfully, godfully slow. I also do a really intensive review of their toggle reports, and we see how much time on average were they taking for various tasks, right? And then I ask them, who on the team do you think would be best to take those tasks if we were working with just our current team members? And then I ask, if you could make up a certain person, who would be the best person to take on this role? What would be their best qualities, their best skill sets, their best interests, right? So I help them kind of figure out with me if there needs to be a different split of the role and where maybe the role was failing or I was failing them in that role prior to them leaving, right? And then once I get that kind of context, that feedback, we get to work for the last couple of months on the training process. Now, for Musicians Playground, this is another thing I'll say. I require notice, and I know that this is a tricky world here, because we can't force people to work for us, but I'm very firm in the language I use when hiring my employees, and I let them know you are bound to working, contractually bound, through a year's period. You must give 3 months notice, actually, because you have such a critical role before you plan on heading off. Most of the time, because I do a good job of creating good relationships with my employees that are invested in the business, they are very respectful of that and of me, and they will always give me that plus more time. So let's say I'm working with an average of 3 months. I'll spend in that 3 month transition period, a month getting those analysis is done, the planning for who we need to hire. Month two is the hiring. Month three is the training. And then in that process, there's some shadowing. And then ultimately the new person takes over, and the other person is just kind of on call for the last couple of weeks if needed. So it happens beautifully over a 3 month period. If you don't have 3 months, well, you're going to have to work with who you have, and you're going to have to consolidate that process a little bit. So I'd say that's probably how I would recommend people going about it. And I'm sure, Nate, there's some things that I missed there that you will be able to remind me of. But I'd say that those are some concrete steps people could take and prepare themselves for the inevitable, which will happen. People leave.
Yeah. So good. That just everything you said was great. But then when you added on this like really practical thing at the end, it just was awesome. Good stuff. Nate? What's your story? Yeah.
I'm going to share a story that I've shared in an early episode. I'm going to actually go back to 2021, I think. Tough to remember timeline-wise. But I'm going to actually share the story about Jason, who is our exploration band director. Started as a teacher, moved into, I think he was just like a mini keys director for a while. We had directors of every one of our curriculums for about 2-3 years. Then eventually we consolidated. Anyways, I'm going to talk about Jason leaving. And Jason was part of the great resignation that happened in COVID. It happened to big businesses. It happened to small businesses. In his case, he fell in love and he moved north to where his girlfriend lived, like 3 hours or 2 hours north of New York. And he's like, I'm not coming back to the big city regardless. And so it's really hard, actually, in this case, back to what we were chatting about it earlier, Alyssa, and the relationships. It's really hard to like hold that against someone. You're like, dude, I need you to stay. And he said so often, he's like, this is the perfect job for me. If my life could align with where the job site was, I would be here. But I'm choosing this next path because it's the right thing for me. So Jason's role was, just to put some clarity on it and to give it some context, he was an A+ teacher, still is, doing what he's doing. He's actually in the process of starting his own school with a couple of people up in New York, which is beautiful. And that's been really fun to watch and help him with. But he's A+ teacher, but also curriculum developer. And he came with a bunch of really strong managerial skills, because before working in music education, he was a community organizer. Mm-hmm. And he lived down in DC for years and he organized sort of community activism. So he was working in an office setting and, organizing a bunch of activists to me sounds even harder than organizing a bunch of teachers. But at any rate, so dig it. He came with that. So he brought that kind of experiential knowledge. And then, of course, he was a really inspiring, all staff leader. He came from a theater background, too. So it was this really beautiful combination of skill sets. And of course, he really believed in sort of the game-based fluency first songwriting approach, which is our methodology. And so when Jason left, I felt like I got a triple gut punch. I lost this inspiring leader who was leading our all staffs and our listeners who have developed team and have learned how to replace themselves at this point on their org chart. This was one of the big replacements for me, as I no longer was the band director, of course, though I hadn't been for years, but I was no longer the one who led the all staff meetings and was pitching from the, rooftops and to inspire on purpose and values. He had taken over that alongside Ben, our private lesson director. And so when he left that, I was like, I remember my partner Pierre and I were so grateful to be actually just attending the all staffs as just a member of the community, but not organizing it, leading it, inspiring it. So gut punch number one is I lost that. Gut punch number two is I lost a thought partner around curriculum development. He was always dragging me into his classroom after teaching a Jam Band 101 and showing me his dry erase board, that's the stuff I love. He just had chicken scratch everywhere and he was showing us the lyrics of his songs that he'd written and he was ping-ponging ideas back and forth with me on how to develop and enrich this curriculum. So then I was like, I lost one of my creative thought partners. Aww. So that hurt. And then finally, of course, we've talked about this a number of times on different apps, but to lose an A+ teacher, sometimes you feel like they're impossible to replace.
Yes.
we feel that in the moment for sure. And so that's my story is it took me quite a long time actually in that instance, but I think that was a combination of being remote, trying to get to reopened in a physical location, as well as the fact that we lost about 5 key members in the same 2 months. But my story is about Jason. And first of all, your transition roadmap of 3 months is beautiful, concise. And if you didn't take notes, those who are listening or watching, you should press pause right now and rewind and write down precisely what Alyssa said to do. Okay, so that's step number one. I'm going to add one other or two other nuances to that, okay? It's really important in a transition that you're transparent because your community and your culture depend on that transparency. And so you, as well as an owner, cannot hold on to this emotion and this tension alone when transitioning a key member. So for example, when someone like Jason left, you want to announce that like right away. You want to be like, you want to say, we are so excited for Jason's next chapter, you know? And fortunately, he's going to be with us for the next 3 months. So we're all going to be the beneficiaries of this transition. And so we just first want to celebrate all of the wonderful work that he's done to date. And then we want to celebrate that we have 3 more months together. And then when that 3 months is up, by the way, you guys, we have a very specific way that we celebrate people leaving in our all staffs, where we literally take like 20 minutes and we go around the circle and everyone shares a positive story and reflection on that person. And it's, and if you do this right, everybody's crying. You know, so I wanted to add that piece on the celebration part. That's a really important piece if you've been investing as much as I hope you have been in your the culture of your company. So I wanted to add that on. The next thing I wanted to add on is just a double down on what you said around there's some shadowing and some training. That month that you were talking about, if you're fortunate enough to have a whole month of overlapping work together, that is a game changer, because that's also the opportunity where you realize as an owner, and Alyssa, you mentioned this early on, I think in your preamble, actually, before you launched into your story, is you mentioned that you have the opportunity to reflect operationally on what's essential and maybe what isn't.
Yeah.
You dig? So that month is when you watch and go, oh, wait, what if we never did this part again? What if we could save that 5 hours a month? What if, like in the case of Jason, I remember reviewing so much of his curriculum work and just being like, you know, 87% of it was just game-changing work that like had been totally inspiring to me. And 13% of it, I was like, I'm not actually sure this is really clear in how it supports a fluency first game-based approach. You know, so I was like, okay, that's true of all of us in our creative work.
Right. And you know, Nate, probably you experienced this too, where sometimes we just don't have enough bandwidth, if I'm being honest. And sometimes things will just stop happening, even if we want them to keep going. But then once they stop happening, it's like, wait, there's not any difference to the top line or to the bottom line or to people's happiness in the studio, the team's experience. Like maybe this wasn't as important as I thought it was, right?
Yes. That's a really important point. Sometimes that's back to the avoidance piece. We'll just reframe it as like bandwidth. We just literally forgot that that was even something that was supposed to be happening, maybe. So that's such a good point, because I want to be really concrete, though, with a specific thing that we stopped doing at BMF that we were like, oh, okay, here's a good example. We ran a monthly newsletter called The Monthly Beat, and it was run by our marketing director, and I loved it because it had a section where every director had to write something and share something. We shared all the new, you know, like classes you could book, upcoming day camps. We had all that, and it was like a really well laid out newsletter, and I loved it. Like, I just, it was totally my vibe. I remember, like, I used to, the first band that I ever made records with and toured a lot with we actually made a printed newsletter that we would create every 3 months, and we would send out to our mailing list of, like, you know, 600 fans or something. And I mean, it's like ridiculous to say out loud now, to think, like, what, a band is going to create a, like, freaking, like, zine that you're going to send out? Maybe it's not ridiculous. Maybe it's actually what bands need to start doing.
Yeah. But, the antithesis of what's happening. So maybe.
yeah, totally. But that was something where I remember Jessica being like, hey, let's not do the monthly beat anymore.
Mm.
And the thing is that it actually took like 6 to 10 hours of bugging people and getting people to write their blurb and then putting it together. And of course it was all automated in our system. And there was a template and all that stuff, but it still took time and effort, and it was still a zing on the calendar every month.
Yes.
And so that's something where we just stopped entirely, and we haven't done it in years. And do I miss it? Sure, I do personally, because obviously it's part of my DNA. I was doing it when I was like 20 in a band.
Yeah.
But is it essential to the business?
Yeah, right. Sometimes,
you know, I'm not sure. Yeah. So
sorry, Nate, I was just gonna say, sometimes it's easy to lose sight of what is truly essential, right? And these are opportunities for, like you're saying, us to get back to, oh, okay, all right, even though I like it, I don't know if I like it enough to want to do it personally or to continue to make time for it. So I'm going to let that go.
Yeah, totally. And I want to bring this back and just put a button on the Jason story and then hand it back to you, Daniel, for actually any follow-up questions. But then I'd love to hear you share your key employee. Yeah. With Jason, what happened was eventually, of course, we got over the fact that I was, you know, the friendship part, of course, outlasted the business relationship, and we're still good friends and still text often, and we visit one another, et cetera, when we can. But what happened was we took a break and didn't immediately rehire the Exploration band director position. Instead, what we did was say, hold on, let's see what we can learn in terms of what we need in this role moving forward. We also asked the question, do we even need the role? And actually, we just hired his replacement 3 years later as Exploration Band Director, because we looked at that community of families in our Mini Keys and our Jam Band 101. That's the age 4 to 8 in our group songwriting programs. And they actually were losing a sense of clear community within that group. And we were like, oh, wait, the Exploration Brand Director does so much more than benefit teachers. It also is the one who sets this microculture within your larger culture. And Jason did such a good job of it. And we were like, when we rehired and brought someone on, we brought them on with the understanding that, yes, there's a really, really clear curriculum now. Now it's all totally baked into our the DNA of what we do. And in large part, thanks to Jason, he planted the seeds, and then we just ran with that and really put it all together. But they're not just ensuring that the curriculum is being followed. They're not just ensuring that there's success and progress for every student within that age range and within those classes. They're not just helping teachers deal with classroom management, which is literally the number one question they all get. and they all have. They're actually ensuring that these families all feel part of something, right? And they're training and coaching the teachers on what it means for these families to feel connected and how to communicate well with them. And so that director position, Jason helped me realize, like, through leaving and through the absence of, back to your comment, Alyssa, when you leave something out, what do you learn from it? Through the absence of that, we as a team all was like, oh, wait. We were like, oh, no, we really need to rehire this role.
Yeah.
But then we need to train this person in this role to clear definitions of success, one of which being a growing sense of community within that age range. So that's what I'm going to say. Lessons learned from a key employee leaving, et cetera. But that's my Jason story.
Wow. Good stuff, Nate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say before Daniel jumps into that, it's interesting. Actually, I'm learning something really new for the transition process that you take at BMF in terms of the notice that you give. I was especially blown away by that because actually, if I'm being fully honest, at Musicians Playground, we have a really gated way of handling transitions. And I think that's giving me reason for pause. Like you've actually said something that I'm like, huh, maybe we could be doing that aspect differently and better. And it could actually be more emotionally transparent for everybody involved. Because I think on my side at Musicians Playground, just in case listeners do things a little differently as well, like we have a whole process where we say, do not let anybody know until we agree upon the messaging until, and like we specifically will wait until we have the transition plans in order. And then once we have the transitions plans in order, we'll probably tell people that that transition's happening around the 1 month to 2 month mark in advance. But it's like we might know 6 months in advance. So I've done this personally, if I'm being extremely vulnerable, because I worry sometimes that if we're going to give people so much notice that the client may try to start planning other moves with that teacher, with whatever.
Yeah, totally.
Right. And so I feel like there's a fear for me personally in giving that notice and the destabilizing effect it may have too prematurely without kind of having all the ducks in order, so to speak, to give that client confidence that there's another step that's really easy to take right around the corner and they can try it out. So yeah, and this will be a conversation. I'll grab you for a coffee outside of here and just get your... Yeah.
Alyssa, can I highlight one thing you said and then let's go to Daniel, which is that we absolutely try to control the communication and the messaging. So that piece is... The very first thing we say is, don't tell anybody anything. Literally, Jessica is in charge. She's the director of communication at BMF.
Yeah.
So we always say, Jessica will let you know when it's appropriate to share. And oftentimes the J team, Jessica, will share the language. Like literally, it's like a template. Here's what we're going to share.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
You dig? So I want to just be clear on that in case it sounds sort of like super loose or something at the factory. Like, don't want to be like, I don't want to portray that idea.
Okay.
You do still always want to be in as much as you possibly can, because we're never in control of everything. But you want to be in control of as much of the map and the journey as possible. Okay, Daniel, so let's hear your key employee story.
Yeah, so this is quite fresh. You know, Alyssa, you had talked about Madison, which was about 5 years ago, it sounded. Nate, you were talking about Jason, which was a while back as well. The situation I'm about to describe has happened within the last couple months. And Nate, the thing I noted about your story was this was not an ops person. To some degree, it was a different role. But like Alyssa's story, this is the story of an ops person. In fact, Kirsten has actually been on this podcast for multiple episodes. Just she brought a level of operational excellence to Grow that we were well suited to work together. And so the story is going to be around this, you know, particular individual. And I will just say that, as I mentioned when Kirsten actually came on the podcast, that our relationship began because she was a piano student of mine when she was in high school. And she had babysat my son during her college years. We'd kind of remain in touch. She was one of the best students I ever had. And, you know, this is kind of going back to those episodes that she was on. Like, I think it was somewhere around episode 90. It was in the mid-90s. Anyway, so oddly, her coming on was similar to the story that you told, Alyssa, where I had an ops person in place. And then that person was kind of on their way out. And just at that perfect moment in time, Kirsten had literally just been let go of a job like 6 weeks before and was kind of down in the dumps. And I'd actually just gotten together with her to just see how she was doing. You know, like she was a person that I had a lot of affection for. And again, we'd had a great working relationship because I'd taught her, you know, piano for 5-6 years. Anyway, just in the course of having this conversation with her, I just thought, oh my word, her aspirations and what she wants to do next really kind of line up with what I could see working for the business. And so we had met for kind of just like a social get together, and walked out of there with the idea of us potentially or potentially working for Grow, and the piano studio. So that was February of 2018. And almost 6 years to the month, she let me know she was leaving. And it was under very, very quick circumstances. And I think there's probably another episode around this, but I will just say that there was a lot of upheaval in her personal life. It wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but similar to your story, Nate, she was getting married. There was major implications for that. And I think just end of the day, it was time. She had been with us for 6 years. You know, I quoted those labor statistic ideas a couple minutes ago. That was kind of well over the average time. That is just an average. The alignment, there's never a good time for this to happen, right? There's never a good time for this to happen. And this came at actually a fairly critical point in my life where there was just a lot going on in my personal life as well. There were it was not great timing. And so similar to Alyssa, there was this moment of just panic because, and this I think is the point that I kind of want to highlight from my story. There was a moment of panic because Kirsten had grown operationally from kind of being like a part-time admin, part-time assistant, to really just running all the operations for Piano Express and GroupLessons.com, all the operations for Grow Your Music Studio. She was the kind of person that I could send an email to her. I could forward an email to her of some disaster and basically say, fix this. Have two words in the body of the email. And then I wouldn't hear about it. And then 2 days later, she's like, yeah, that's done. That's the kind of person she was. So here's the thing I want to point out. You definitely want a person like that on your team to have someone who I'll call like a level 4 or even a level 5 team member, on a scale of 5, someone who's truly autonomous, truly has a vision for what their role can be, will come up with creative ideas to make things better, or even beyond that, come up, just wholesale create things from scratch, whole systems in the business, have ideas and create them. She came to me multiple times and say, hey, there was this problem. I came up with a solution. I solved it. Here's the thing. And it was just the best thing she could have done. And I'm not seeking to like pat myself on the back here, but one of my strengths in business is just, I do have a very operational mind, and she had very much an operational mind. And a lot of times she would come with solutions. I'd be like, yeah, man, that is so efficient. That's exactly how I'd conceive of it. And again, not patting myself on the back, because there was times that she would come to me and she'd come up with something that I wouldn't have thought of. She just had a very different perspective on it and had a great perspective on it. Like, I appreciated the solution she came up with because it was better than the thing that I would have thought of. Or she would push back against ideas. And, you know, in the episode where she came on, we talked about sometimes we butt heads. the idea of who's Batman and who's Robin. And, sometimes her ideas went out. Sometimes my ideas went out. Anyway, so that's the kind of, you know, person she was. And so I just say all of this to say that when she said, hey, you know, I've got to go, my first thought was very similar to Alyssa's. How bad is this going to be? Like, I wouldn't say that I went as far as to say like, oh, well, the business is over. I'm not dogging on you, Alyssa. You know, I love you. But it was just like, how bad is this going to be? And literally it just, you know, because of some of the work that I do internally and just, I'm a much less anxious person than I was a decade ago, much less. And so what I felt was almost this resignation of, okay, well, we're just going to go through this. So we're going to see what happens. Because she's full time, has been for 4 years. So that's the story. I'm going to cut off on that little bit of a cliffhanger there. I'm curious if you guys have questions for me or where we want to take this conversation.
Daniel, I want to go back and highlight something you said and see if you have any additional thoughts on this. When you got to know her as a student, and then you you got together for coffee, and you saw the opportunity in them.
Mm.
And I think there's a really important pause point in your story, right at that moment of coffee with Kirsten, where you saw an opportunity and you saw all of these possibilities and identified this person differently than you had up until that point. And the reason why I bring that up, Daniel, is because we talk about the moment when they give us notice and we think, we'll never find another person again.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
But it's so important for you to go back to the coffee or whatever you guys were doing in that social engagement and think, that was you. You're the person who identified opportunity.
Right.
You're the person who saw possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just need to tap into that again, right? I'm curious, like, because it's easy to think we're someone different now.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Well, what I would say in response to that is just that, and this kind of goes into the biggest lessons learned that I've had coming out of this situation, because I will pay off the cliffhanger I gave earlier. But yes, fully acknowledge that. What I would say is that some of the best people I've ever worked with have almost always come through warm network.
Mm.
And so for me, so that's one. A second lesson learned out of this is that, and this is maybe a strength and a weakness, and this is maybe how I'm going to change things going forward, or I'm considering this. But it's almost more important to me the character traits of the person that I'm working with as opposed to what their qualifications are on paper. And that does fly in the face of actually a lot of advice out there about hiring, because one of the business thinkers that influenced me most, Evan Pagan, he had this mastermind called Get Altitude. And in it, he said, the mistake that most business owners make is that they hire people because they like them. They hire them because they just like the person for whatever reason. But the truth of the matter is, I wouldn't say that I hire people because I like them, but I do hire people because I get a good vibe about them. And that might be actually very similar. So maybe to pay off a little bit of the story is that actually, nothing fell apart over the last 6 weeks. Everything has continued to run smoothly. And I think there's reasons for that. And I can go into them if you all want to hear them. But what ended up happening was a lot of the stuff that Kirsten was doing just smoothly handed off. We smoothly handed off to Bethany. And what's interesting, too, is that kind of dovetailed with the desire Bethany had to get more into the operational and admin side, where there was things that Kirsten was doing that Bethany really wanted to be doing, but there was no space for her at the table. And so it really was just a matter of, hey, you take this, take this, take this, take this, and she's just done all of it. And how does that tie in? Well, what I would say is that in both cases, I have spent a ton of time with Kirsten, a ton of time with Bethany. They both understood how we do communication around here, how we do processes around here, how we document everything, how we, there's just all these expectations, appropriate expectations as to how things run. And in the few cases where there was something that was confusing or maybe wasn't as clear as it could be, I wouldn't even say that was on Kirsten. It was just maybe this person thinks one way and this person thinks another way. I'll tell you all the time that there have been miscommunications between me and Kirsten and me and Bethany. And it was just because they were thinking in one way and I was thinking a different way. And we just were kind of talking past each other. It's nobody's fault. And so when you have a written document or a written system, inevitably you are going to have areas where one person wrote down something in one way and then the other person just really doesn't understand it. And so we kind of have to piece together, well, what's going on here? How do we fix this? But I would just say that, you know, again, the nightmare scenario hasn't come true. It has actually been a very smooth handoff. And I will even go as far to say as that this was actually a good thing. And that's probably a whole other episode unto itself, which Nate and you and I should record that episode. But yeah, I think just lessons learned maybe. And then Nate, I would like to kick it back over to you, but just lessons learned are one, document everything. And we've said that over and over and over again in this podcast, but this scenario right here is exactly why, because we didn't miss a beat. And there are a few things that Kirsten built entirely from scratch that we are kind of like going back through and trying to, you know, figure out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, but overall, like, it's been so smooth, so smooth. So document everything. And then don't make a mistake that I did. And this is maybe where I'll stop talking. But going back to what I said about getting the vibe, like hiring more for what I feel is a good culture fit or a good personality fit, hiring for character, like all very, very important. But I can see that in my hiring practices, I have been a little bit looser than what I should be in terms of like setting expectations at the beginning, being a little more formal in how we hire, being a lot more knowing the role for which I'm hiring for up front versus like hiring for jobs and then kind of like seeing what fits their skill stack as we get deeper into it. I have been a lot looser and you know, this is just a lesson I'm learning that's got to change. So that's all I'll say. Yeah. You guys can ask all the questions you want now.
I just want to say really quickly, I think that's such an important point too in hiring as a whole, Daniel, is like that a lot of times we are given a choice. Do we want to hire, do we want to create a role for a person, or do we want to find a person for a role? And those are two very different things that can lead to two very different outcomes. And I don't know about you guys, I don't know, Nate, Daniel, I kind of will toss this out to both of you, but like in my earlier days of running my business of growing Musicians Playground, and especially when I was becoming like a first time employer, having like a teacher or two for the first time or an administrative assistant for the first time, I often would just look at somebody, like any warm body in the room, and be like, you can do my business. Like, you could do the administrative work. and then I would just see opportunity and possibility and live in the wings of potential. As I've gotten a little bit maybe older in the business and as a manager, I've realized ain't no one got time for the wings of potential. I need to make sure I am hiring for experience and for the role. So they could be the loveliest person on the planet. And I might say, you know, let's just keep this to coffees, but this is not going to work for this role. So I think that there's a very distinct change that can happen also as we're going through these turnovers within our key employees of our business. These are also great opportunities for us to reflect on ourselves as managers and hirers. How did we do a good job with that hire? How did we not do a good job with that hire? How do we need to be a different person in the hiring process for this next time around to get the results for where we're going? Because what got us to where we are is not going to get us to where we want to go. So it's a great inflection point also for us as hirers.
Mm. Wings of potential. Alyssa, I feel like what we need to do is there's some version of a balance between, I remember, Daniel, you said to me once that Kirsten and you had the exact same Colby score. And I actually went into my Evernote to see if I could find that note you said when you shared it with me. And for those that you don't understand, Colby is, or aren't familiar with Colby, it's basically like, how would you define it, Daniel? How would you define a Colby score?
Colby is defined as, what is your action style? What is your work style? Are you a fact finder, or do you just jump into something? And so there's like four different categories for how you act. Yeah.
Yep. So fact finder, where do you think Nate's a fact finder, or do I just jump in? I mean, Daniel, I'm sure you have your strong opinion, but I would say this is where wings of potential align with the Colby score. Like, we want to find a balance, right, on our whole team between the amount of fact finders you have, the researchers versus the fast actors. And like, I'm a fast actor. So of course I'm going to balance heavier towards Wings of Potential. Cause I'm like, let's do this. As you said, Alyssa, warm body. Let's go figure out how to do this together. You know, but this is one of the reasons why, for example, like Daniel, I really appreciate our partnership because I know that we score differently on the Colby.
Yes.
You know, I'm very aware that like being able to tag team on something with you is highly beneficial to me because I benefit from the way you do work.
Yes. I second that, Nate. I think you and I would be dangerous too in anything we do because that would be just.
We would just be like, yes, we can. Wait a minute. Who's going to do all these 18 things?
That guy on the street over there, he'll do it.
But I just wanted my last comment, and then because I know we need to wrap, is I want to go back to Daniel, your story, and I want to cite what you said about Bethany. Because I wrote down a bunch of notes here. Like, one thing I wrote down was roles change and level of investment changes. Mm. And level of investment changes over the life of a member of your team, I would say, based on your investment in them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it has to be you specifically. It could be another member of your team, right? But Bethany is a great example. I don't know how many years she's been working with Grow, Daniel. Like, is it 3+, 4 years, something like that?
It was 4 in February as well.
Wow.
4 in February. And Kirsten was with you for 6 years. I sense a pattern. Like, you're investing in these people. You're seeing an opportunity again in Bethany that you maybe didn't see initially, but now you do. Mm. And with investment comes their increased engagement. And I think that this is one of the most common misconceptions when we talk about scaling and we talk about growth in our music school, that we think that somehow it magically happens through automation and systems and well-documented procedures solely. Mm-hmm. Those things are really important. However, there is also you're setting aside a clear intention in building team and investing in the people so that they can develop both the hard and soft skills necessary to actually thrive mm-hmm. with all your systems. Mm-hmm. Right.
Hey, it's Nate again. You know, every year at Brooklyn Music Factory, we get dozens and dozens of great reviews from our families. And you want to know how? Because we ask them. And they're happy to leave a review because of the positive impact that we've made on them. And so now I have a simple ask for you. If this podcast, the 7FMS podcast, was helpful to you, would you mind leaving a review for Daniel and I? And please share the podcast with another music school owner that you think might benefit. It's one of the best ways that you can support us. We appreciate it.